I'm very worried because I don't see replacements. I don't see the potential. I don't see a real president. I don't see a protect and serve. I don't see a God-fearing country. I'm very, very worried for the public's sake. I'm very worried about the economy. Remember, corruption has crippled our economy. There has more businesses closed down in the last 6 months than in COVID. Did you know that? There are people calling me to mow my lawn. It is horrific, the economy. And unfortunately, amongst all this that's going on, crime will escalate. I mean, look at the drug busts now. The criminals, it's a narrative. You can commit crime and can get away with it. Crime begets crime. But anyway, I pray for the public and I end with this. And I ask that God will bless us all with insight, wisdom, might, power, discernment, knowledge, and all the attributes and good stuff that we need to survive and to get through this. And I ask that God will be gracious and merciful upon us.
Welcome to Democracy Unplugged. I'm Xavier B, and I'm filling in for Phumi Mashego for this week. It's a great week, but the Madlanga Commission has actually captured the minds and hearts of the South Africans all over. It's pretty much on the lips of everyone. How much corruption is there in South Africa? To help us dissect this very serious issue that has actually placed a question mark on the confidence of policing in South Africa, we've got Stefan Grobler, who used to run the anti-corruption unit back in the 90s, and we've got Mr. Mike Bolhuis, who runs a security company that does a great deal of work with the SAPS. I'm going to turn to these two gentlemen to understand a bit more about what has been said at the Madlanga Commission that has cost us 147 million rand. Gentlemen, I'd like to start with Mr. Mike. You've got quite a history in working with the police on serious crimes, serious high-profile investigations. What has been your experience and what would you say is happening at the Madlanga Commission with the police?
In the beginning, we're talking about the 70s, 80s. There was proper policing. I wouldn't say, you always have to add this, I wouldn't say it was perfect because there was favoritism and there was other issues, especially because, you know, of the political situation. However, it was much more in control than what we see today. So unfortunately, we have to be very realistically and say what we had was better, although it was maybe politically incorrect at that stage, because I believe all humans are humans, and all humans should be treated humanly, humanely, and all humans has the right, as the democracy requires, in their life. They have rights. They want peace. They want bread on their table, a roof over their head, have education, and have safety and security, and have a government and an authority that protect and serve. Those are the ideal criteria that was reasonably in place at that stage. But ever since the changes came about, it is shockingly that we can derive and deduct that once new powers came in place, that form of power started to be corrupt. So in any way, the statement is always all power does corrupt, and you always have to have any entity or authority always watched as well. Otherwise, they will take over and corruption will set in because it's a mindset. We didn't have and now we'll take. And the real issues of the past regarding safety and security was never really resolved because it happened so quickly. And in my opinion, as a specialist investigator, doing this for about 40 years now, and seeing how things has changed separately and in a corrupt way to where it is now, I expected it to happen. In other words, it was an infant at that stage, but it's grown to a monster now that is so great and so strong and so effective and so organized crime and on a racketeering basis that it is extremely difficult to bring down, because with whom will you bring it down and with whom will you replace the monster so that the replacement is one that can stand at any form of racketeering and organized crime, which has now totally and absolutely a form of control in our country. So at that stage,
Yeah, I love what you've said so far, Mike. You really touched on the heart of the issue and how deep the corruption goes in South Africa and why the corruption kind of started during the transitional era between the apartheid government and South Africa. Policing was better. Yes, we can say that. But there were some political issues that you've mentioned. And I think we're seeing that in the Madlanga Commission, where political interference is still very present in the policing service. It's not serving the public strictly. It is serving some of the politicians as well. I want to go to Stefan for a few minutes. Stefan, you've got a great history within the SAPS during that transitional period where South Africa was changing over from the apartheid government to the new government we have under the ANC. You actually headed up the anti-corruption unit that started in 1996, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Way before any of the arms deal, any of the big major corruption issues came up. A unit was already started for that purpose. Why was it started in 1996, if I may ask so?
Okay. The predecessor to the National Anti-Corruption Unit was called the Special Investigating Unit. But at that stage, the Special Investigation Unit already existed. It was the judge who headed it up, and it was called after his name. And when the Special Investigation Unit in the police started, it was actually a part of the Efficiency Services Department. And that was to enhance service delivery and investigation, because at that stage, even before, there was also always complaints or allegations of corruption in the police, and internal investigation units within the police, they just couldn't handle it. They couldn't deal with it. Why not? Because it's a specialist investigation. It's like Mike says, investigating corruption is an extremely difficult and specialized job, because it needs special training, it needs special equipment. It really is a problem if you don't have all these things. And unfortunately, you know, Mr. Xavier, at that stage, all right, I'm not going to dwell on the top management that we had at that stage. But then, unfortunately, Jackie Selebi was appointed as the commissioner. And it wasn't very long before we started hearing allegations of corruption and whisperings in the corridors of him and his cronies. And I started an investigation, and I remember very well, it was only after he was appointed, though. I started my tenure as the head of the anti-corruption unit while George Fires was still the commissioner. And the whole idea was that corruption within the South African police be investigated. I think that was a bit short-sighted, because for the simple reason that I feel that corruption in the police crosses borders with the private sector. Because where does corruption really occur? It occurs at the contact point between the police and the private sector. Because you need somebody to have, shall we call, a very good friend in the police. And a very good friend costs money. So if you want somebody to be, shall I say, investigated, lay a charge, matter is investigated. If you're lucky, it goes to court. If you're not lucky, it's found not guilty. But, you know, even a simple thing, and I think Mr. Bolles will agree with that, you need a policeman sometimes to get you information that you can't readily get. Now, at that stage, if you had a very good friend in the police, getting that information was easy. I think Mike will agree with me saying that certain information is very difficult, if not impossible, to get now. You need very good investigative procedures and techniques to get that information. These days, we've got laws that protect, you know, personal information. You've also got the Access to Information Act. So it is possible to get that. But in those days, it wasn't there. The law wasn't on the books. So if you wanted a name and address of the owner of a motor vehicle, for instance, how would you get it from the licensing department? If you as a private person went to the licensing department and said, look, I want the registered owner's name of this and this vehicle, the chances are that they wouldn't give it to you. How you got that? You have to go through a lot of trouble, probably a legal thing to get the information. On the other hand, also tracing people from address to address, that's also very difficult. And therefore, you need somebody to, shall I say, oil the wheels of commerce. And that's where the corruption starts. The corruption
Thanks, Mr. Grobler. I mean, that's amazing what you've said, and you've given great insight into the entire collaboration between the policing and private sector, which we see a lot of. And even during the case with Vusi Muzi, which is probably one of the best criminals in South Africa at this point, we've seen that he owned a private security company and was collaborating with the police as well. But then you've also got good guys like Mr. Bolhais, who owns a private security company and does investigations with the help of the police and has actually created some very good outcomes based on those investigations. So I just want to go quickly to Mr. Bolhais and ask you, sir, you've collaborated with the police many times, and you've done some amazing investigations over the last 30 years that brought down some big issues. What's been your experience in terms of corruption and the good guys and bad guys? Are there factions within the SAPS at this point?
Yes, I just have to add on the initial statement that I made from the initial safety and security set up in South Africa and the political situation and to its day to today, where it's extremely corrupt and unstable and instability in the political sphere as well. One of the reasons during all these years since the 70s till today that the criminal mind or the mindset is there has come forward that because of losses in the past and because there was mistreatment and political instability and everything per se in the mind of people, they have taken it upon themselves to rectify it by taking absolutely everything. And as I've said, that form of power is corrupt because they do not consider the innocent and those others that has also gone through that. So it's not a sharing situation. It becomes a very selfish crime. Corruption is an extremely selfish crime. It's only about them and them that are involved. And there's also no honor amongst criminals at any time that it could kill someone. All right, on your question, yes, we've done, by the grace of God, we give God all the glory. Our strength is in God, and I do as God allows, and I take my wisdom, insight, might, power, prosperity, discernment, and health and wealth and anything I take from God and I accept from God and could be taken in any moment from me. So I understand what is grace and I understand that I have a merciful God. Therefore, I deduct that we are successful and that we make differences in the hope to change lives as well. We don't just chase criminals. We try and change them because they don't become better in prison. They become worse. They become part of gangs. So we are feet on the ground. We are human experts. We believe in total identification of a human being, a total evaluation, a total risk analysis, a complete investigation, a complete solving of the investigation, and then crime prevention. That is our credo and our motto. If you don't do that in its totality with a human being, with your fellow neighbor, which you're supposed to love as yourself, you will never curb crime, stop crime, or prevent crime, or solve crime. Because as we see today, punishment doesn't fit the crime. And I later would like to answer especially on that, because that's why crime is so prevalent today, because it works. And the criminal can commit crime because he can get away with it. And it pays. All the previous saying of crime does not pay has reversed. Crime pays. And that's why there are so many that commit crime. And crime and organized crime and racketeering on that high level, which we see now, can only be committed by the five or six legs, of which the main leg is authority, an informed authority. The most dangerous criminal today is a highly qualified policeman that's corrupt and that has authority and control. That is the most dangerous criminal, not the hijackers, not the cash in transits. All those guys fall under him because he has the authority, the ability, the knowledge, and he's qualified, maybe not qualified policeman, but qualified to commit corruption. And he's got his connections as the previous head of anti-corruption has said. And if you have that one in position, then you are where you are. But pertaining to successes, it's still shocking to see that we've seen during the last, say, 30, 40 years that punishment does not fit the crime. So we, unfortunately, it's not like in America where we can do everything. We have to do everything on our side and then hand it over to the police. And if the police drops the ball, and the judicial system drops the ball, you get a situation where, as I've said, crime pays. Because we can expose, we can send out the projects, we can catch the criminals. But then it's in the hand of a policeman, a prosecutor, and a judge. And all three of them should have the same knowledge as we, ability, and passion. Otherwise, it's not a unit and you won't see crime dealt with professionally.
I like that you've touched on that, because we do see a disconnect between the SAPS and the National Prosecuting Authority and then the judiciary in punishing these crimes. For example, KT Molefe is very implicated in a very serious crime. He should not have gotten bail, but he seems to have gotten bail. But that aside, Mr. Bolais, what do you feel the private sector is doing in terms of collaboration with the police, the good guys? Because we know now that the bad guys are operating with the police. And we've seen, you know, rogue blue light units and rogue private security units doing their own thing, involved in kidnapping, extortion, all sorts of crimes that involve at times SAPS members. But there is a great deal of private security companies that are collaborating with the police and doing the right thing, which is solving crimes, putting bad guys away. Do you feel there is opportunity for that, or is it very limited from the SAPS side?
Xavier, you're wrong. Most security companies, most, up to, I would say, 95%, is not on our level. They are normal security companies. I'm not downgrading them or looking down on them. We work closely with them, but they're not specialist investigators. We are extreme specialist investigators into serious violent, serious economic, and serious cybercrime. We are the experts presently with other leaders in the field of cybersecurity, which is the biggest crime in the world and will be the biggest crime in the world for time to come, and is escalating with hundreds of percentages yearly. But be that as it may, let me just say to you that no crime, not one crime, will be or has recently been committed without a cell phone. Now, if I walk into any crime scene and there's a body, there's a heap of documents, there's two witnesses, there's a lot of array of forensic information, bullets, whatever, and a cell phone. And they say to me, Mike, choose one. I'll take the cell phone. This cell phone has your fingerprints on. There it is. This cell phone has saliva on. It's the DNA. This cell phone places you at the scene and your movements before. This cell phone shows you who you are, what you believe in, who you like, your girlfriend, your jokes, your political attitude, your religious beliefs, your connections, all your criminal communities. That's why I said the moment when General Nkwanazi stood up, and here's the difference in what he said. I know I'm all over the place now, I'm veering away, but this is important to understand. The moment General Nkwanazi stood up and said that this is the corruption level and he's going to expose it, he said something that very, very few people said before. And I have facts. I have evidence. That is what caused all of this. If he's just stood up and said, wah, 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 we wouldn't have had what we had today. But the moment he said he had facts, and the moment those who has listened knows of his, let's say, he's beyond reproach or character, because if somebody says something, you would know from that person that says something if it's Skinner and Kokprat or if it's facts. And if somebody like a general in his level with a good history stands up, they're not going to just not take it seriously. And that's when the cat was in the chicken pen. The president should have immediately, wait, I have to say something, because this is the pinnacle of what I'm saying about the cell phone. The president should have immediately called Nkwanazi in with a special team immediately and have taken on all those that is implicated, all their cell phones, all their laptops, raided all their houses, taken all the documentation, because if you don't do that, what's the first thing, Xavier? If I say I'm coming for you, I'm going to investigate you, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to clear up any and all evidence against you.
Look, it's interesting you say that, Mike, because the president did actually meet with Nkwanazi weeks before the commission was announced and started, right after his press conference in July. So Nkwanazi was summoned to the union buildings and he did meet directly with the president. But I think you're quite right. He didn't use the right means of action to address the issue. Instead, he suspended the existing minister and he started the commission. And he also, I think he may have given instruction to the national commissioner to suspend the deputy commissioner, Sibiya, but then keep Nkwanazi. It's a very strange way of dealing with a very serious issue that Nkwanazi had mentioned, particularly political interference in the SAPS, which shouldn't be there. But coming back to you, Mr. Grobler, I'm sure you want to say something after that.
I do. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly with what Mike says. Speed, immediate action, and then removing them from the power base that they have. In other words, you place them on immediate suspension immediately, and you stop him from interfering with the investigation, number one. Number two, destroying evidence or contaminating evidence or intimidating witnesses and that kind of thing. Because you must remember one thing, and that is that in that position, a police official or a police officer of his caliber is in a very strong position. He's got a lot of power. I mean, if you look at the press conference that he held, he's got armed bodyguards with him. And I mean, I don't know whether those firearms that they had were loaded or not, or whether they even knew how to use them. But the point is that they're there. It's intimidation. And one of the most important things in the investigation of corruption, this is what should have happened. And I agree with what Mike says. Call Mkhwanazi immediately. Say to him, look, let me have the information that you've got, or the evidence that you have, or whatever. And then get your team ready. Get your warrants for search and seizure. Seize everything. Laptops, cell phones, documentation, everything that you can lay your hands on. And neutralize these people, because they will, that's one of the things of corruption, they will abuse the power that they have. Remember one thing, they've got to defend themselves. And everybody, you can find a guy with his hand in the till. And you'll say, what are you doing? No, I'm just fixing the till, or I'm clearing the till. And for that reason, it was necessary for me to take the money out. So there's always an excuse. Everybody is always innocent. It's their good right. It's their right to be in it, to say that they're innocent. To be able to find them guilty is another question. But at the end of the day, the whole issue regarding corrupt investigations is a dedicated team that knows what they're doing, and they've got the law on their side, and you're doing the things the right way. You do the right things the right way. In other words, if the law says you cannot enter a man's house and search without a warrant, that's what you get. You get your warrant, and you do what you do. You know, there's so many things that we can talk about, and I don't think we've got time to do all that. But the point of fact is that when you find your evidence, they must be safely secured, and the chain of evidence must be maintained, from the day that they seized right up to the day when they go to court. Because if you interfere with that chain and you can say that this evidence has been corrupted, then that person will get the benefit of the doubt and will be found not guilty. So there we are. And you know, as I said to you earlier on, a dedicated team. And I just want to touch on what Mike said. And I appreciate tremendously the work that he does. What I do think is important in this whole thing is that all these specialist investigations, the private security industry, everybody, should take hands and collaborate with one another. At this point in time, unfortunately, I think that there's a lot of animosity in the South African Police Service between SAPS and certain elements within private security. They don't want to share the information. They want information. The police, they want the information. But they should also share the information that they have. I mean, if they've got a good working relationship, let's say for argument's sake, with Mike's organization, his company, say to him, Mike, come along. Let's sit around the table. What if we've got this investigation? What can you bring to the table? We've got this. What do you need? In other words, there are a number of issues that when you do an investigation, the first question you ask yourself, what have I got? In other words, what am I dealing with? Then certainly, what do I need in this investigation? Where will I get it? How will I get it? How will I use it? And once I get the information, what am I going to do with it? So you see, there is so much so many things that you have to take into consideration. And you cannot do it by yourself. The police really need all the help and, for that matter, training. And let me just tell you one thing as far as training is concerned. I think that at one stage, the training division, and it was a division in the police, was closed. Wow. What kind of training is there now? Not any that I'm aware of. And that's one of your biggest problems. You cannot do an investigation, number one, if you don't know what your investigation is. It comes back to what I said just now. In other words, if you're investigating corruption, Do you know what corruption is? Do you know what you need to prove that corruption? And who are the witnesses? Where are you going to find them? How are you going to find them? How are you going to collect the information? How are you going to keep it secure and safe? Does your team, and you need a team, a multidisciplinary team, and Mike has got a team. He can't do everything by himself. That's why he's got a team. And they're dedicated and they're trained and they know what they're doing. The police need that as well. What I mean, if he's got that kind of backup, why can't he share with the SAPs? And if the SAPs have got also a team, why can't they collaborate with him?
Gentlemen, you guys have given so much insight onto the most important facet of tackling corruption, which is investigation. And South Africa is really struggling on investigating corruption, especially these high-profile cases that involve seriously connected people. That said, we have, within the law enforcement agencies, we've got SIU, which I think Mr. Krobler has mentioned. We've got the State Security Agency, which should be monitoring huge quantities of money that are disappearing randomly and end up in Italian sports cars. We've got the IPED, who should be stopping pretty much any police corruption within the SAPS. And we've got specialized units within the SAPS, especially, for example, in the Western Cape with the gang violence. We've got an anti-gang unit, which is not making much headway. I think both of you have proposed an independent agency, something like the Scorpions or the Hawks that now exist but are not really active. How would that work with the current units that are available, the SIU, the Hawks, the SAPS? So it's a great option to have an independent agency investigating these matters and maybe headed up by someone like you two. But how would it work legally with the SAPS?
Firstly, the question is, does the South African Police Service Act provide for this kind of thing? And remember one thing, Mr. Xavier, and that is that each one of these organizations that you've mentioned act under their own specific laws. You take the Special Investigating Units Act. There it is. They work in terms of the provisions of that act. And so do all the other organizations, either under a State Department or as a set-up organization. The point is that you need a change of legislation to enable this to happen. Otherwise, the situation will continue. And each one of these guys will work by themselves. And remember, they are very, very keeping their information very close to their chests. They don't like sharing information. I mean, I think Mike will agree with me there. You go to the ordinary policeman in the street, Mike, and you say, listen, what about this and this and this? Do you think he'll tell you? I don't think so. Because they, if I can use the word stingy with their information, they want you to tell them what you have, but they're not going to tell you what they have. And that's the big problem.
On that jealousy. Point, Mike, would you like to add, because this is something I'm sure you've experienced, where you try to bring something to SAPS, but they've got their own investigation, and they're not interested in what you're saying.
Well, you see, that's the thing. It's because I don't think you're going to change that in a very short while, because it's a mindset. So many of these guys feel, I'm in charge. I'm in charge. Everybody wants to be in charge. You know, it's like, how shall I say, a little kingdom. Everybody wants to be in charge of his own section. And if we can just get past that jealousy thing and say, all right, let's get all the players together. You know, the SIU, the SAPS, the Hawks, and I think a couple of other organizations have bonded together for particular investigations. But that's just on an ad hoc basis. They should be, as a unit, a permanent unit. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that, to whom will they report? We have had proof of the corruption that exists at the top level from the minister. You know, these are allegations, all right? These are allegations. I take just what happened to the South African police service in Celebi's time. The moment we got close to him, what did he do? He closed the unit down. This is exactly what Mr. Mchunu is alleged to have done, to close down the politically sensitive killings. Why? Why did he do that? Was he paid to do that? Did he feel maybe, oh, the heat is becoming very close to my body? There must be a reason for that. And in Celebi's case, we know what it was. He was a crook, a proven crook. I mean, he got 15 years in prison. Unfortunately, he never stayed in jail for one day, but he got it. You know, I was present. I was present in Parliament. Say again?
Yeah, you see, that ties in with what Mike was saying. The punishment is never enough. But you Mike, know, I'd love to get... I'd love to get your view on this. What do you feel about the collaboration between the SSA and, you know, state security is under the presidency directly. They report directly to that minister. So they're separate from the Ministry of Police, whereas the Hawks and SIU, and I think SIU still reports to the Minister of Police. And the SAPS also reports to the Minister of Police and IPED as well. So most of the law enforcement reports to the Minister of Police, but SSA is quite unique in that it reports to the presidency directly, especially after 2021. That's how it's been structured. Do you feel there's enough collaboration? Would another agency that's independent that you're proposing actually have an impact, or would it be hampered by all these other agencies?
It's happened. All right, so. Sorry, Mike. Let me just get in here quickly. Remember one thing I said to you, there's this jealousy thing. Everybody wants to be king of his own heap. And there's a lot of shall I say, marble polishing, if I can use that word. Oh, we were the first guys to uncover this, or we did the best investigation, and we got so many convictions, and we arrested so many people. When you're doing any kind of investigation, and let's just concentrate on corruption, it is a multidisciplinary investigation. You need all the help and resources that you can. Why? Because both parties in corruption are guilty, the corrupt giver and the corrupt receiver. That's why I say both of these parties need to be able to get rid of the information or the evidence against them. Because remember one thing, even upon being found guilty, they still maintain their innocence. Yes, I've been framed. It's a political setup. It's that. I have never, and I think Mike will agree, I've never found somebody who comes up and comes clean and says, look, I'm a crook, I'm sorry. They won't. They'll keep on fighting right until the end. Right until the jail doors close behind them.
Yeah, even behind jail. Mike, your point?
You know, there's so many things said now, and we can actually carry on for hours, can't we? However, the quick back to just answering you regarding security firms outside. Some of them are scared. Some of them don't have the qualifications in order to assist the police. They can just do protection. And some of them aren't, how shall I say, in a trust and co-working relationship with the police, which when I say some, I mean to the most of up to 80% at least. Then I hear what Mr. Grobler says, but adding to that is that the mindset of the police has also changed due to themselves not being trained properly. Many of them can't even run 100 meters. They have health issues. They have relationship issues. They have communication issues. They can't even communicate professionally. They have an attitude. They do not want to protect and serve, and they are in the police because they want the salary and the benefits. They are painters trying to be mechanics, which requires much more savvy and qualifications. And they, most of them, if not all of them, including the generals, would not, if I were to take them one by one and ask them if they've studied the policing books, the laws of policing, the laws of protecting and serving, the documentation pertaining, as Mr. Grobler has stated, what is corruption, what is racketeering, what is organized crime, the points of fraud, how do you investigate fraud, when is it just theft, misrepresentation, sexual crimes, extortions, extreme extortions, and. Bringing me to the point of, we do not, up to 80%, if not more, have qualified, trained, fit, willing, able, capable, ready to protect and serve policemen, which includes our government officials and the president. Let me tell you what a president should be. A president's benchmark is the one that knows everything on any subject, in any institution, business, safety and security, judicial system, nature and conservation, what's going on the sea and on land, what's going on. He needs to know that via an informant structure. His informant structure is all those working for him, under him, including the police. You want to tell me that this president and Zuma, from the Jackie Celebi era, where it actually really started kicking up, do not know what's going on? You talk about hearing things in the corridor. These people talk to each other. They all know each other, and they all have files on each other. That's why they don't whistleblow or come forward or throw each other under the bus. That's why they have scapegoats. One or two goes to prison, et cetera, et cetera. But the president is supposed to know what is policing so that he can identify if there's a problem. What is, how does the judiciary work so that he can identify and step in? The president is absolutely willfully blind and oblivious in this situation. He knows. He knows this all, but he doesn't know how to handle it. And I can tell you now, he's scared. Because a president can be killed. A president can be exposed. They have files on each other and they won't talk. And like Mr. Grobler has said, who's going to come forward and say, here's my cell phone? You know, if somebody says, I'm a pedophile, the first thing I will do is I'll say to him, here's my cell phone, here's all my digital electronic communications. I'll present myself. Why didn't any of these generals do it? They never come forward and present themselves to prove their innocence. They come forward in order to rather expose any and other excuse that they aren't innocent.
In other words, to blame somebody else, to shift the blame onto somebody else. Like I say, it's not me, it's the other guy. It's the other guy, not me. He. Pointing fingers. Just look at the debacle going on in Parliament at the moment. All these generals, they are sticking knives into one another's backs. They are carrying on. It's sick to see that. And if you ask me, what would be the ultimate solution? Get rid of them. Get rid of them. It will cost a bit of money, but you take them and you say, right, I'm ending your contract, here's your severance package, off you go. And then you replace them with competent people. And where do the competent people come along? You find out from the private sector, if necessary. Otherwise, you do headhunting within the South African Police Service, because there are competent and qualified people. There are. They're just being sidetracked. Why? Because cadre development and, you know, these people that are being appointed who've never been policemen. I saw a video recently at a funeral, an official funeral, where these police officers, senior guys, with a host of medals. Where the heck they got those medals, I don't know. You know, I spent 40 years in the police. I've only got six. Only six?
Only these six?
I haven't been in the police for 5 or 6 years. They've got 20. Where do they get these bloody medals? Excuse me. Where do they get these medals? Anyway, the point that I want to make is you need, remember, a policeman and Mr. Bolles will agree, investigation is a very, very specialized job. Not everybody can do that. So, where do these generals come from? I'll tell you where they come from. They come from nowhere because they are nobody. And unfortunately, you get somebody who's not qualified, who's not trained, who's not no experience, they will obviously appoint people to support them. Do you think that if I am a corrupt general, do you think I will appoint somebody who I know is a good, competent corruption investigator? Of course I won't. I won't do that. Why not? Because I'm endangering myself. I must surround myself with my own people. And that's where the problem comes in. You unfortunately cannot stop that. So that's why I'm saying you must get rid of the dead wood, because there's a lot of dead wood. And we can, as Mr. Bolles said just now, we can carry on with this discussion until tomorrow, because there's a heck of a lot that we can say about it.
Look, on that point, I mean, you guys have been very insightful on the importance of investigation. And I think even the public can understand now that in it, everything in terms of tackling corruption comes from that investigation and the chain of evidence and the integrity of that investigation, which is simply, I don't think that environment exists currently in SAPS, and it's mainly due to politics that it doesn't exist today. Mm. But in saying that, there is another element or another entity that is doing fantastic investigations, which for the most part are never prosecuted. And that is the South African media. And we've seen forensic journalism take a major role in exposing corruption in South Africa. You've got News 24 that has a dedicated unit of journalists investigating matters. And for the most part, nothing more than a book deal comes of these cases. What is your opinion on the, you know, both of you, what is your opinion on the media investigations that often capture the minds of South Africans and pretty much convict someone as corrupt way before the NPA has even opened a docket?
You see, the thing is here, these people, the media, they are really your support that you need. They can give you information which you then have to change into evidence. And they can lead the investigators into identifying possible witnesses and lead the investigation. But unfortunately, once again, the South African Police Service will not allow that. They will never allow. Let us say, for instance, I am not quite sure what the gentleman's name is, but I think it's Peter du Toit from Media 24. I think so. Why don't you get him? I said to him, right, my friend, what have you got? Let us co-opt you and let us use you as our source of information. And then when we've got that information, we turn that into evidence. He is the man who leads the investigation, in other words. But they won't do that. They won't do that. I don't know why. Maybe it's because there's this jealousy where they think, no, these guys aren't as well qualified as we are. You know, Mr. Bolles said just now something that I just want to comment on. His forensic investigators, his computer experts, they're the best. Why? Because he trains them and he pays them and they are there. You understand that? The South African Police Service has stopped training, as far as I know. They had a division for training. It's closed down. Why is it closed down? Who closed it down? Do they now think that all the policemen are absolutely 100% trained? You go to the... Let me tell you this. I remember sitting and evaluating an applicant for the anti-corruption unit. I said to him, what is corruption? He said, no, corruption is fraud. I said, okay, what's fraud? He said, no, that's corruption. I said to him, do you know what the elements are? He said, well, I think lying, isn't lying fraud? I said, it's part of it, yes. And he was quite right, actually, because corruption, you have to commit fraud to be able to commit corruption, because it's a two-way thing. Remember I said to you earlier on, the corrupt giver and the corrupt receiver are equally guilty. There is no such thing in the law as attempted corruption. It's corruption. Like there is no such a thing as attempted assault. Assault is assault. If you threaten somebody with physical violence, it's assault. Mm. If I make as if I'm going to assault you and you believe I'm in I'm capable of doing it, it's assault. There's no attempt.
Yeah. Mike, your points? Oh, sorry. Carry on. Yeah. Okay, Mike.
No, please hand over to Mr. Bolles.
Yeah.
Guys, just at the end of my last statement, just make sure that I said it correctly there, because I ended up while stopping, that those presently that are brought through the hearing and investigations are not there willfully. They are there because they have to be, and they would not come forward and prove and try and prove their innocence. They are going to rely on any and everything that could go wrong in order to find them innocent. They are not going to give their cooperation. You have to drag it out of them, and you have to literally threaten, intimidate, inverted commas, any and everybody who has been named and mentioned as corruptors and racketeers and organized crime participators. They're going to have to actually tell them that they have to say something and have to answer and give an account. But be that as it may, to the point of your statement, it is very clear that, you know, I've made the most important notes here. We discuss something here like get rid of them and so forth. But unless it is clear to the public that there's total transparency and that the hearing was and the investigation was correctly done and there was no influence or political influence by anybody, and that those that has been part of the investigations doing it and the hearings has not in any way been influenced in whichever way and was qualified to do it, the public would want to see the following. They would want to see, although it's late, that all the accounts are frozen, all the houses are raided, all the valuables taken, and those that needs to go to prison. And or there should be serious judgments. If there is not serious punishment of crime, the public's respect and relationship with the police and the authority and the government will never heal or become better. Presently, the public is in fear. They are in total uncertainty. They're extremely concerned, and It's a total, absolute debacle. The country has been hijacked completely. It's a mafioso state. The criminals are running the show because the innocent and the do-gooders are not. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had this situation. We have a president that cannot lead this country. It's my opinion that he's in fear, in shock, and does not know how to handle this. It's too big. And here comes the thing. Now we've taken all their money, frozen their accounts, and they are in jail. Who do you replace them with? If you have no competent policeman, the question is clear to the listeners today. Do you, listening, watching today, do you know of a brilliant policeman that can take over at your station, at your specialized units, There's not even a cybercrime unit left. Like Mr. Grobler has said, so many units has closed down. As a general, who would you, that no policeman, who would you put in that place? Mr. Grobler, who would you? So where, Xavier, who would you put in the place of all these criminals that are either going to be suspended, fired, or go to jail? And remember, I said it very clearly, if the punishment does not fit the crime here, we will not win the people of this country over. They're going to become more mindset into criminality. They're going to pay their way further, and they're going to go the road of from smaller corruption to the biggest form of corruption, which include not paying SARS, which include lawlessness. And then therefore, my final statement on that is also, if there is no deterrent in place in future, look, it's very easy in my organization. Let me use us as a template. I'm the big boss. You want to tell me, I wouldn't know if one of my investigators is doing a private. Bullshit. I pick it up like that. You want to tell me the slightest thing in my organization that goes wrong, whether it's emotionally, spiritually, physically, I won't pick it up. Bullshit, I pick it up immediately. And you know what? Yeah. What about forensic polygraphs every 3 months? A general, a leader, the president included. If the president wants to prove him as innocent here, why does he not often say, nation, on national TV, you can ask me any question, I'll answer it, and I'll do a forensic polygraph. If somebody says, I'm a pedophile, the first thing I do is I'll give my phone. The second thing I'll say is, do the investigation in front of the public. I'm a public figure. I'm extremely well known. The public has the right to know about these allegations. Forensically polygraph me. Thirdly, lifestyle audits. Please, man, if you get 100,000 rand a month as a general, how can you afford a Lamborghini? if you have a specific package at the police and you live above it, you are committing corruption. So the four most important things: give all your digital and electronic communications to the present authorities, all you generals listening, all of you in the country listening, all of you that has been named and shamed and accused, you know what? Give your cooperation. Give your digital and electronic communications. Secondly, give your complete administration finances and let them do a lifestyle audit. Thirdly, prove your qualifications that you're a real general. Or were you the other day a constable and then a captain and now you're a general? Where did you get all those medals? It's misrepresentation. Most policemen in the police presently are committing fraud. I'll tell you why. They're doing a job they cannot do. That's misrepresentation, theft, fraud. He's getting a salary, but he's doing another job. He's not doing the work that he's supposed to be, a protector and a server of this country. He must have the passion. He must want to. He wants to take you in an open arms. He must be your go-to guy. Who of you listeners and you guys can say, you know what, I want to be a policeman. I really trust him. This is my go-to guy. If I have a problem, I'm going to go to this constable or this captain. Or you know what, yes, it's wonderful. This president of ours, he just really cares. He's always there. He always steps in. You know, he's a fighter. Yeah, I love it. You know, this government, SARS, all these units, any and all this infrastructure that makes this country grow, they're doing so well. Oh, I love them. Thank you, God, for these wonderful people. We cannot say that. We say we're a God-fearing country. I don't see it.
You know, I think you both have delivered a lot of insight and a lot of truth here, because the facts support what you're saying. I mean, out of 9 commissioners, police commissioners, provincial commissioners, only one stood up. The rest are being summoned to either Parliament or the Madlanga Commission. Mm-hmm. And I think it really speaks to what you guys are saying. The lack of convictions is a result of the poor investigation skills from the SAPS. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we're running out of time. And I know we could speak about this the entire day, and I appreciate that you guys have given so much. But to close, I want to ask one question, and that is, how should the South African public make sense of the Madlanga Commission and corruption in South Africa, specifically with regards to the SAPS? Mr. Grobler, we can start with you.
I'll give you in a short sentence. Quick, swift, and effective response. That's it.
Yeah, I think we've discussed that very well. And, you know, you said it quite well. Immediately when there is a allegation, for example, against Deputy Commissioner Sibiya, he should have had his house raided then. It took over 3 months to have his house raided from the time Provincial Commissioner Makonazi made the allegations. I mean, 3 months, it's more than enough time to hide anything you need to hide.
And if anything, you know, if anything incriminating was found in his house, it just shows what an idiot he is.
Very true, very true. But Mike, to you, same question. How should the public make sense of it? I appreciate the inspiring challenge that you've made to say, go pick a policeman that you think is correct. I mean, that would properly increase confidence in the SAPS. But how should people make sense of the Madlanga Commission? I mean, this commission is going to continue for the next few weeks. It's costing us 147 million rand. There's some seriously scary facts coming out of it. How should we make sense of that?
All right, there's a few statements quickly. It will cost more, and it is going to take longer, and there's going to be more whistleblowers, and there's going to come more hospitals, other infrastructure institutions, and other criminalities and corruptions during the years pertaining organized crime and racketeering that's going to come forward. This is the tip of the iceberg. Secondly, I'm extremely worried, and I will end in a short prayer for this country, because we have a lot of innocent people which are forced to extreme poverty and uncertainty and extreme mindset situations where they are in survival mode, where so much so that they will steal their neighbor's chicken just to stay alive. And that is a form of corruption. And it drives people. The biggest start of, in any way, of all crimes is poverty and illiteracy, uneducated people. That's where it all starts. However, if you that causes corruption eventually, but corruption also causes poverty and further illiteracy and uneducation. And then I must say the media is brilliant. What you guys are doing, the media is fantastic. I know them all. I love them. I've always complimented them. I pray for them. They're doing a very good job. We have the best media in the world. And I personally compliment them. They never treat me with disrespect. They always put things before us to check if it's real. And we've built that relationship during the years. And I protect them. I'll go out of my way to protect them, stand for them, and assist them. And then lastly, I would ask the public, as you have said, don't just assume, don't make a deduction, don't listen to hearsay or stories or rumors. You have to thoroughly identify the information. You have to thoroughly evaluate it. You have to thoroughly do a risk analysis of that information. You have to investigate it. And you have to, when you send it across or discuss it, bring always a form of crime prevention in place. In South Africa, the biggest sport is not rugby or tennis or cricket. It is skinner and cockbrat. It is constant sending stupid fake news, unconsidered, thoroughly checked information. It's just they just cannot help themselves. They read a heading and they're, like you say, have made and found and what. Everybody guilty, and just spew their information without considering the facts. So they must sit back. They are the public. And they can only trust after the complete hearings and commission and investigations that it doesn't become a book or a story, and there's been no aftermath of incarceration and getting our money back. Once that is done, they can give their either support or there might be a mayhem. I must close with this, Xavier and Meneer Groblaar. I am very worried. I'm very worried because I don't see replacements. I don't see the potential. I don't see a real president. I don't see a protect and serve. I don't see a God-fearing country. I'm very, very worried for the public's sake. I'm very worried about the economy. Remember, corruption has crippled our economy. There has more businesses closed down in the last 6 months than in COVID. Did you know that? There are people calling me to mow my lawn. It is horrific, the economy. And unfortunately, amongst all this that's going on, crime will escalate. I mean, look at the drug busts now. The criminals, it's a narrative. You can commit crime and can get away with it. Crime begets crime. But anyway, I pray for the public and I end with this. And I ask that God will bless us all with insight, wisdom, might, power, discernment, knowledge, and all the attributes and good stuff that we need to survive and to get through this. And I ask that God will be gracious and merciful upon us.
Amen.
Yeah. Amen. So, and thank you. Thank you.
That was an amazing conversation. I hope we get to follow up one day after the commission ends and we can make a lot more sense of it. But I think everything you've said really feeds into the truth of the situation. So thank you very much, and thank you to our listeners. Remember to subscribe and like this video, and please comment. We're happy to read the comments and respond to them. And we hope you've enjoyed, and we hope this has been slightly more insightful than the Madlanga Commission, which has generated tons of articles, but not much sense of it. Thank you so much, and enjoy your day.